All right, welcome back to the Compound Growth Show. This is John. Today I have Michelle Heath on the phone, who I've been trying to recruit onto the podcast since it launched. We're finally making it happen today.
I'm here for it, John.
Thank you so much for coming on today.
Always, yeah. So happy.
So there are a couple of things I wanted to talk to you about today. One is you've provided a lot of advice over the last couple of months about how companies should be thinking about growth in a down economy. We have a lot of people, classes 2009 through 2021 that have known nothing but a bullish economy, and I think so there'll be some changes, and some of us have forgotten what it's like to be in a tough environment. And then you also have become somewhat of a tastemaker. I try to avoid influencer, tastemaker in on LinkedIn, and so wanted to talk to you a little bit about that as well. So first, thank you.
Yeah, I love it. I'm psyched to be here and share whatever I know to try to help everybody else. That's what it's all about.
Awesome. Yeah. And for background, you run, can you tell me a little bit about your firm?
Sure, of course. So I'm the founder and CEO of Growth Street. We are a growth strategy consulting firm based here in beautiful Boston. And we help our clients be unrivaled. And what that means is that we help them unleash the real kind of strategic power of their brand in order to use strategic differentiation as the way to win the market leadership position, win the hearts and minds of customers, and run a much more efficient go-to-market. So lots of our clients come to us and they don't really understand brand. They think of brand as branding and logos and color palettes and things like that. And we really help them put their brand to work and show them how to really get the most out of these amazing assets that are at all of these brands' fingertips, and put them into something that's really going to work hard for the company and be the force multiplier. So it's a lot of fun what we do.
Very cool.
And I'm all about the giddy up. And I'm all about the giddy up because strategy should be fast, and it should be able to be quickly tangible and turned right into action. So I shouldn't forget that part, because you know, people hear strategy and they're like, oh God, you know, it's going to cost all this money and take months and months. And that's not, you know, I hate the word strategy. It is what we are. But at the same time, we're all about turning strategy quickly into action so that we can get you on your way and give you the giddy up. So,
right. Okay. I've always wondered about what the background of the giddy up was. Mm-hmm. But before you did Growth Street, what were you doing?
So before Growth Street, I was an executive in a number of different firms. So I spent kind of the first half of my career in big Fortune 500 companies like Fidelity Investments, JP Morgan, companies that had, tens of millions of dollars that they were pouring into marketing. I worked my way up. I started as a sales assistant, an admin, for a bunch of sales guys, worked my way up through a bunch of corporate leadership positions, got to the top, realized, I'm so far away from the customer. I love rolling up my sleeves and really being, closer to the ground in terms of like, what are the things that we're doing to actually make an impact? And it's really hard to do that at a big company. And so I get that. So I left and I went to a number of startups and learned how to do that from the ground floor up, building startups and having failures and having successes. And then in 2013, I founded Growth Street. So I'm able to sort of take this combo plate of, understanding big sort of looking ahead strategy with the boots on the ground stuff that you need to make the bell ring on a daily basis, and bring that to all of our clients. And our clients range from early stage startups that are, seed funded and trying to get to their A round, all the way up to the Fortune 100s, and love sharing, the business challenges that I see, where each can kind of learn from each other. It's a pretty cool aspect of what I do.
Yeah, you've always talked about that, being close to the customer. What do you call it? The bullseye? with
the bullseye. Yeah. I love that you know that, John. Like, that is so,
I love all your sayings. I love surround sound. We'll get to that later.
Surround sound. We're going to talk about that too. Yeah. So, I mean, the way I think about bullseye is, you know, the problem, let me start with the problem and then I'll give you the solution. The problem that I see probably 9 out of 10 times when, a prospect comes to us or we start working with a new client is they say, our market is everyone, right? I just literally just had this 2 days ago. Our market is everyone. Okay, tell me more about who everyone is. And it's hard, you know, it's tough. You got, you know, you want to pare it down, but you're afraid because what if you leave somebody out? And the way that I think about it is that if you think of a dartboard, you know, you've got all these rungs. You've got this very, very tiny bullseye in the middle, and then the rungs that go out, and you're trying to throw the dart. It's really hard to hit that bullseye. You might get one way on the outer edge and one in the middle and one. And so then it's just very random. We, from a brand and marketing, go-to-market strategic standpoint for growth, we want to be hitting the bullseye. And the bullseye, the way that I think about it and the way we think about it here at Growth Street is that is the most valuable target audience for your business. That yeah. could be one group of customers, it could be two, and bigger companies, it could be 3 or 4 or 5. But knowing who they are so that you can really hone your entire brand strategy around those most valuable customers and speak directly to their pains and desires and motivators and intentions and the things that they care about the most, you're going to have much more success going small on that bullseye versus just trying to take this sort of, you know, what do they say, ready, shoot, aim approach. It's a lot of spaghetti on the wall and you don't know what's going to stick. And we all know that luck is not a strategy. So to me, the strategy is, you know, really figuring out that bullseye, and it's going to make all of your go-to-market efforts more efficient. And with a client right now we're working with, they're raising their A round just through this work that we've been doing with them. They're seeing new ways to be able to talk about what they do to their investors, because they were showing a TAM that was not really accurate. And their investors were sort of calling them out on it. And all of a sudden we do this target audience bullseye work, and the CEO is like, oh my God, I've been looking at this kind of all wrong, and I got to look at this differently. So it's not just about, you know, a campaign or some sort of tactic. It's about how the entire organization can align around a group of customers, and it's going to help you ring the bell much more efficiently and effectively.
Yeah. Yeah. I think when we're doing the ICP exercises, we're thinking about it in a couple of ways. One is understanding your customer can be a really strong form of inspiration for understanding what types of campaigns to go after them with, what their buying cycle looks like, what the challenges are happening in their daily life. But number two is, like, I think ICP and persona exercises provide a lot of scale to your business, because when we're looking at it, we're looking at what leads are going, or what accounts are moving most efficiently through the sales cycle. Mm-hmm. And we look at stats like time to close, lifetime value of the customer, all of those things to help inform us on what the ideal customer profile looks like. So from the technical side of things, we see that as well, but it's really interesting to think about that. I mean, you lay the groundwork for all these different things that can come from building out that ICP and building out the bullseye.
It really is that. And I think you raise a good point about sort of like, there's this technical aspect of customer, like, you know, you think of like customer success owns customer, and a lot of our clients' organizations, right? Or in a lot of companies, or what I see oftentimes is maybe some persona work has been done, but like engineering owns it. So it's more kind of the, you know, the archetypes that I kind of learned way back in the 90s going to, you know, user-centered design school and learning how to build out personas that were more for product design. And I think that's influenced how I think about creating, you know, this target audience bullseye or these ICPs, where it really is about looking at your customer as a person, right? They have all these living, breathing, they, you know, they're just people, and they shop on Amazon like I do, or they go, you know, get their groceries at whatever market, you know, they're people and making buying decisions all throughout their life. What I, you know, you read about 35,000, you know, decisions a day that we make. And I think there's something like 200 alone on food. So like, where is your SaaS software solution coming in to that buying decision if you don't really understand the customer as a person and all of those attributes that can, you know, what they care about the most? It's hard to really hit that bullseye. So, you know, so what we do is we really help the whole organization use that as a launch pad. To your point, it's like this foundational asset that everyone can use. You know, marketing's using it, sales is using it, engineering's using it, product, everyone's being able to use this. And when our customers start saying like, oh, you know, project manager Pete, or it's like, yes, you know, we've really kind of internalized this, and now we're going to be able to kind of get the ultimate benefit by everyone, you know, having that efficiency using those archetypes. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah. Tell me more about this company that was raising the A. What was their process in building out the archetype? Or sorry, building out the bullseye.
Yeah, building the bullseye. Well, you know, as many of our clients come to us with, like, I sort of equate it to like, if I go to the doctor and I'm like, I'm having a problem with my knee. And then the doctor sort of looks you over and they're like, well, it's actually not a problem with your knee, it's a problem with your hip. You know, that's sort of what I do, is I sort of come in and very quickly diagnose what's happening. So in this case, I was really brought in to help provide some coaching and marketing advisory at a more CMO level for an amazing, more junior member of their team that they have. So they were like, okay, how can we up-level this person in terms of like giving them more support, helping them really be able to sort of fuel more of the marketing fire? And then once I got in there, I was like, okay, well, show me what we've got for target audience. Show me what we've got for brand strategy. Where is our UVP? Where are they? And it was like, we don't have those things.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So then I was like, CEO, co-founders, we need to get these things together, because your marketing organization, you know, this poor person cannot possibly do, you know, they're doing an amazing job with what they have, but imagine what they can do if we have these other things that become core foundational, you know, components of the go-to-market program. So then I showed them this framework that I have about, you know, how do you be the unrivaled market leader? And the CEO started talking about the A round and what, you know, some of the challenges have been there. As I started looking at the pitch decks, I said, well, you know, I think we don't have the tip of the spear in terms of how do we want to talk about this to, you know, our customers, to the potential buyer, to the investors. Who are we going after? What do those things look like? And so as we started to unpack those together, it really has been a process where, you know, I will say to their credit, like the CEO and the executive team have been so open-minded to, this is a new way to do things. It's about thinking about your vision and your mission and your strategic differentiation. It's not all the nuts and bolts of product features and kind of the engineering aspect where they're usually used to spending their time. And they've been super open to that and seeing the effects of like, oh, we unlocked something new here. Let's go put that in the pitch deck and see how that works. Oh, great. That's working great. Let's now tackle the next piece. So we've been sort of layering out these brand components, and the result of that has been everyone in the organization being able to sort of realign themselves around these target audiences. And now we're sort of in the final throes of the brand guide, doing all the go-to-market road mapping, planning for Q1 and Q2 next year, the marketing budget, everything else. And so now it's all just like, it's so much easier. You're not guessing what you need to do. You know what you need to do because you know who you're trying to talk to, who you want to attract, and what you need to tell them. So it just makes everything so much easier. We're not having to guess, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I think when I've pitched personas at a lot of the companies that I've worked at previously, it's been shot down by the executive team, because oftentimes what I found is it's it's second nature for them to understand who the persona is. Like they feel so ingrained with it, but it's such an important exercise to make sure product is building the product for the same customer that marketing's marketing to, that sales likes to talk to. And so bringing it all together. How did marketing get to the point where they're the leaders in kind of driving consumer insights and understanding the customer and building this out?
Well, I think what ends up happening a lot of times is marketing sort of gets to a point where they're like, guys, somebody tell me, like, who is the target customer, right? If it's this and this and this, or what I see oftentimes is it's changing, especially right in those early stage companies, as you're going from C to A to B, your customers are changing, which is normal, right? You may be going from more SMB customers to enterprise, or, you know, different industries within enterprise, whatever it may look like, the customer is changing, which is normal and great. It's what is in the executives' heads, is that getting translated out into the people who actually are on the front line. So go-to-market is typically sales and marketing. And if sales and marketing are not aligned on who they're going after, then you're kind of going after like whatever the flavor of the month is of customers. And it just, you know, it just completely inefficient. So what I often see is marketing sort of gets to like, they're just stuck. You know, marketing begins to just, it's not working. And then when I unpack it, it's like, well, the reason that it's not working is because we don't know, like, who are we supposed to be trying to attract? What do those people look like? Not just like a demographic, like, you know, it's John and he's this old and he lives in this, you know, city or what, you know, helpful maybe for targeting, but like not helpful for understanding, like, what do those people care about the most, and how is our company the ultimate best qualified, uniquely positioned to solve those problems? And it's that intersection. If we don't have that, everybody's just kind of spinning their wheels. So I often see, you know, I say I'm sort of like the ultimate facilitator. My job is to pull that out. So like this, you know, early stage company I was talking about, we did a whole personas exercise and it was contentious. There were times where it's like sales did not agree with the CEO. You know, the CEO does not agree with marketing. It's like, let's hash it out. Let's have, that's good debate, right? We have data. Right. We know who these customers are. Are they the customer of the future? I don't know. You tell me, right? So we need to have these conversations and get all the right people in the room. And now it's like, you know, the freedom of not having to continue to go back and redecide. Now we can do check-ins quarterly and say, are these still the right customers? What are we learning? What's new? But where we have a place that we can come from that everyone has agreed on and everyone's aligned around, that just kind of unsticks what's stuck and gets us on our way faster. So that's kind of what I've seen.
Yeah.
You know, so like the personas themselves may not be the problem, you know, but they are the solution in terms of a way to rally the entire organization around your customer and make sure that everyone is clear about who we're trying to attract and retain, you know, in terms of loyalty and everything else. So super powerful tools.
And this, I mean, I think what we're likely to see as the economy slows down, hopefully it picks up and takes off in January 2023. But I think we'll probably see a lot of companies kind of double down on personas, understanding the customer, because figuring out who your best customers are, the customers, there's been a lot of luxury spending in B2B, which sounds weird, but a lot of, oh yeah, this is nice, I want to get this. But there isn't a lot of, but a lot of companies need to start focusing more on kind of retention and figuring out the actual ideal customer profile. And, you know, when you start to shrink budgets, or budgets remain the same year over year, but you're still looking to have a big impact, focusing in on specific customers is going to be more important.
Totally agree. And it doesn't mean that other customers won't come.
Right.
Means that where you're going to focus your dollars, your resources, your effort is around the people that you want the most, where you feel like you're best, you know, you have the best opportunity to uniquely serve those people. That, you know, when I talk about being unrivaled, that's really what it is. It's like ownable white space where no one can touch you. That's what, you know, every organization, every company should be looking to find, because that's what's going to help make your marketing and the dollars that you spend more efficient and effective. You're not just like guessing and learning. And to your point, when budgets are flowing, it's easier. But now it's like, how do we have certainty? You know, that's what I keep saying. Are we certain? You know, it's hard to be 100% certain because marketing is always testing and learning. But how do we have more certainty around the things that we're doing, that they're actually going to have the impact we want, that they're going to help us reach the business goals, and everyone knows what that looks like. So I do think that is changing. And I think, you know, that's how it should always be. You know, having luxury spending is amazing, but I never see it that way. I always look at it like, how do we spend, you know, as efficiently as possible to get the best results, and feeling confident in what we're spending on. I think that's one of the toughest jobs for the CMO, is like, how do you know? You don't, yeah. You know, there's no, this is absolutely going to work. So we're doing right. lots of testing and learning.
But, and built into that too, with personas, when you really narrow in on an audience, you see the word of mouth benefit of that, because typically there are networks within certain communities. People are changing jobs every year and a half to 2 years. They're going to bring your solution with them. That's going to introduce your solution to a whole another company. But when you have a tight-knit community, it's one of the reasons why when people lived in San Francisco, they still live in San Francisco. I'm kidding.
But, I love that. Like,
those startups were very focused in building around that Silicon Valley and San Francisco community. And so it was tight-knit, and you could, you know, really get the word out with a lot of companies that had those bleeding edge early adopters in order to get that early buy-in, and then kind of accelerate growth to the point where where you're able to cross the chasm.
Exactly. And I think at every stage that still holds true. I think what happens is that as you grow, you kind of get further away from the customer. Like I said to you, you know, as I went up the ladder in big corporate, you're just further away from the customer. And it's the same to me. It really should be like, who are the people who love you the most?
You know,
who are the customers that love you the most? And let them do the marketing for you. Like, that's my whole approach with all of our clients, is like, how do we create that bullseye, and let those people tell everyone how great we are, and write reviews and build the case studies and come on speaking tours with us and do our events. Like, we don't have to tell you how great we are. Just listen to, you know, UPS or Coca-Cola, or I don't know, whoever is in your target audience. Like, they'll happily do it for you if you feel that engagement with the brand and with the people at the company. And that's all it's all creatable. It's just, you know, how do you want to focus on building those relationships with the people, you know, within your customer base. So everyone kind of retains that really cool early adopter status.
Yeah.
Give it some legs, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
A lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. We had talked about LinkedIn and other stuff. I'm probably just going to need to have you on for another podcast.
Let's do it again. Yeah, we could break any of this stuff down, and happy to be here. So thanks for having me on, John. It was awesome. Giddy up.
Yeah, thank you so much.
See you now.